Poland's prime minister has said the latest Russian attacks on Ukraine are the result of appeasing barbarians. Iran's supreme leader has rejected a demand from Donald Trump to agree a nuclear deal with the US or face a potential military response. More than 1,000 people are reported to have been killed in recent violence in Syria. France have taken control of the Six Nations title race by ending Ireland's hopes of a Grand Slam. Poland's Prime Minister Donald Tusk has described the latest deadly airstrikes on Ukraine as the result of what happens when someone appeases barbarians. Officials in Ukraine say at least 25 people were killed in a wave of Russian attacks. President Zelensky has called for further sanctions against Moscow, warning that the strike showed Russia's goals in the war were unchanged. From Kyiv, here's our Ukraine correspondent James Waterhouse.
Ukraine's ability to defend itself against drone attacks has been hampered by America's blocking of its aid, intelligence, and now commercial satellite imagery. The latest airstrikes targeted the town of Dobropilia in the mostly occupied Donetsk region, as well as in the northeastern Kharkiv province. President Trump has acknowledged an increase in Moscow's aerial bombardments and has threatened large-scale sanctions and tariffs on Russia. But in the same breath, he also suggested that anyone in Vladimir Putin's position would be doing what he's doing. Volodymyr Omelyan is a Ukrainian major in the armed forces. He says that for Ukraine, working without the use of American satellite imagery is like fighting blind.
We don't see what Russia is preparing to do on its territory anymore. It's very difficult to foresee the main direction of the future attacks and their supplies. Therefore, you know, it's like fighting being blind. You hear the noise, you feel the enemy, but you cannot see it.
President Zelensky is due to travel to Saudi Arabia tomorrow, ahead of a meeting of senior Ukrainian and American officials to discuss the terms of a potential truce. He has proposed that as part of an initial agreement, there should be a mutual pause on the targeting of infrastructure, but Russia has firmly rejected this idea.
Sir Keir Starmer has welcomed a commitment from his Australian counterpart to consider joining what the government is calling a coalition of the willing for Ukraine. Downing Street says the Prime Minister spoke to Anthony Albanese this morning as part of efforts by the UK and France to bring together a group of nations to act as peacekeepers in Ukraine if a ceasefire is agreed with Russia. Norway's Foreign Minister Espen Barth Eide told the BBC his country would be happy to contribute but stop short of promising to provide peacekeeping troops.
We are involved in all these conversations about how we can influence what's happening towards a ceasefire, what kind of peace can be there and how that can be secured. I think we should not put the cart before the horse because we need to make sure that we define what is there to defend.
And you can watch the full interview on Sunday with Laura Koonsberg at 9 o'clock in the morning on BBC One. Iran's supreme leader has dismissed a threat by President Trump of possible US military action if Tehran refuses to engage in talks about its nuclear program. On Friday, Mr. Trump said he'd written to Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, warning that a negotiated solution would be a lot better for Iran. Our Middle East regional editor Mike Thompson reports.
Though intent on pushing Iran to agree to nuclear talks now, it was President Trump himself who walked away from a previous deal with Tehran in 2018. That had given the country sanctions relief in exchange for curbing its nuclear program. Iran has since greatly stepped up its enrichment of uranium to near weapons-grade levels. Now, Mr. Trump's threat to use military force if Iran fails to renegotiate a deal has been roundly rejected. The country's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, says his country would not negotiate under pressure from what he called a bullying country. As tensions grow, Qatar has warned that an attack on Iran's Gulf Coast nuclear facilities would cause widespread contamination, leaving countries across the region without water. Tehran has repeatedly insisted that its nuclear program is for peaceful purposes only, though experts say its enrichment program suggests otherwise.
The number of people killed in spiralling violence in western Syria has reportedly risen to more than 1,000. The British-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights says the vast majority were civilians from the Alawite minority. It says they were shot dead by security forces who'd been battling gunmen loyal to the ousted Assad regime. From Damascus, our Middle East correspondent Lina Sinjab reports.
Videos and images on social media of bodies lying in the streets are causing anger among many Syrians. The coastal city of Banias is believed to have witnessed the worst violence, with women and children among those killed by forces affiliated to the new authorities. Those forces are reported to include Chechen fighters. Violence erupted after remnants of the Assad regime from the Alawite minority ambushed security and army personnel, killing dozens of them. Syria's interim president, Ahmed al-Sharaa, has vowed to hold anyone who attacked civilians accountable. So far, his forces seem unable to control the situation. Many of his supporters have a hardline Islamic agenda that could pose a real threat to the unity of the country.
The Conservatives have said the Human Rights Act should no longer apply to immigration decisions. They say foreign criminals or migrants who are here illegally should be prevented from challenging deportation on human rights grounds. Our political correspondent Ian Watson reports.
The Human Rights Act was passed by the previous Labour government and incorporates the European Convention on Human Rights into British law. The Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, has not proposed leaving the convention at this stage, but has argued that some foreign criminals and migrants who are here illegally have used the Human Rights Act to avoid deportation, claiming, for example, that this would undermine their right to family life. She's proposing to retain the Act itself, but disapply it in immigration cases. This would give her a clear political dividing line with Labour. But some in her own party and Reform UK are pushing for withdrawal from the convention itself. Under the convention, migrants could still appeal against deportation to the European Human Rights Court in Strasbourg. A Home Office source said the Conservatives had left the asylum system in chaos and that their amendment would be totally unworkable.
Officials in Calais say a man's died while attempting to cross the channel in a small boat. A local charity claims a second man also died, although that hasn't been confirmed by the French authorities. More from Simon Jones.
In the early hours of this morning, a boat carrying around 50 migrants set off from a beach near Calais, heading towards the UK. But a short time into the journey, a man in his 60s from Kuwait suffered a heart attack. The boat returned ashore and he was handed over to the emergency services, but they could not save him. The others on board then resumed the crossing and were picked up mid-channel by the UK Border Force and taken to Dover. A second boat carrying migrants alerted the French Coast Guard that someone may have fallen into the water. A search was launched, but nothing was found. At least 6 people have died this year attempting the journey. But despite the risks, more than 1,600 people have reached the UK on small boats in the past week, with extremely calm conditions at sea.
Police searching for a man suspected of shooting dead his wife on Valentine's Day have recovered a body from the River Thames. Edward Stockings was thought to have entered the river near Dartford after attacking Lisa Smith in a pub car park in Knockholt in Kent. Two boys aged 14 and 15 have been arrested by police investigating the murder of a teenager in Glasgow on Wednesday. Armin Teckley, who is 15, was found seriously injured in the street in the west of the city. He died at the scene. Cameron Buttle reports from Glasgow.
Flowers have been laid where 15-year-old Armin Teckley was found on Wednesday night. A message taped to the wall offers prayers to the family. The anonymous note says the loss of a young life on the streets of Glasgow has shaken the community. Armin Teckley was found with serious injuries in the St George's Cross area of the city and he was pronounced dead at the scene. Police Scotland said they were treating his death as an isolated incident. It's believed the teenager, who was originally from Eritrea, lived with his father and had recently been granted right to remain status. Armin Teckley's sister described him as really sweet, so kind and so bright.
A protester who climbed the Elizabeth Tower, which houses Big Ben, appears to have been brought down safely. Negotiators spent much of the day talking to the man who was holding a Palestinian flag. Police closed Westminster Bridge, causing heavy traffic in the surrounding area, and tours of Parliament during the day were cancelled. Now, with details of victories for France and Scotland in the Six Nations and the rest of the sport, here's Paul Sarris.
Scotland held off a late surge to beat Wales 35-29 in Rugby Union's Six Nations Championship at Murrayfield. The Scotland head coach, Gregor Townsend, felt his side could have been more clinical.
You know, sometimes it's difficult. The opposition, who are a quality team, can get things right. They got more ball in the second half. And sometimes changes as well to the bench are never as smooth. But we were disappointed with not scoring when we had a couple of chances in the last 5 minutes and obviously conceding those tries. But delighted with the way we started the game, the way we played, and obviously getting a win for our supporters.
Ireland's hopes of a third consecutive Grand Slam were dashed by a dominant French side in Dublin. France won 42-27 to move top of the table with one round of matches to play. The Ireland captain, Caelan Doris, had no complaints about the result.
We weren't clinical enough early on, but having said that, still felt we were right in contention at half-time and felt confident and knew we, if we started well, we could go on to do it, and we'd been behind by a couple of points against Australia, against England, and there was no shortage of belief. We started well, but it was that sort of middle 25 of the second half that we just weren't good enough.
Football, Mohamed Salah scored twice as Liverpool came from a goal down to beat the Premier League's bottom side, Southampton 3-1 at Anfield. The league's top scorer, Salah, was pleased to get the win without being at their best.
Yeah, because I don't think we played good today. I don't think, maybe second half we played a little bit, but first half we didn't play good at all. But that's, if you want to win the Champions League or the Premier League, you have to win that kind of games.
Elsewhere, there were victories for Nottingham Forest, Crystal Palace, Brighton and Aston Villa, while the match between Wolverhampton Wanderers and Everton finished 1-1. Tennis Jack Draper and Sonai Kartal have both made the third round of Indian Wells with victories over Brazilians. Draper beat the rising 18-year-old star João Fonseca, while Kartal knocked out the 16th seed Beatriz Haddad-Maia. Our tennis correspondent Russell Fuller reports.
João Fonseca won his first ATP title in Buenos Aires last month and brought an exuberant and expectant crowd with him. He showed flashes of his prodigious talent and power in the first set, but Draper, in only his third event of the year, showed why he is now so hard to beat in a 6-4, 6-love victory. Kartal drops only three games as she reached the third round and is cashing in on her status as a lucky loser who was beaten in the qualifying competition.
And in athletics, Great Britain's Jeremiah Azu took gold in the men's 60 metres at the European Indoor Championships in the Dutch city of Apeldoorn. Azu's teammate Andy Robertson won the bronze.
Paul Saras. The Vatican has reported a slight improvement in the condition of Pope Francis, who spent the past 3 weeks in hospital in Rome. It said the Pope, who's 88, was showing a good response to his treatment for double pneumonia. Let's take a look at the Sunday papers now. And the Sunday Times has a front page picture of Ukrainian paramedics helping a man wounded in yesterday's attacks by Russia on the east of the country. Ukraine's fresh agony is the headline. In the Sunday Telegraph's words, useless civil servants are to be pushed out. It says ministers are to outline plans to shed Whitehall jobs to cut costs. Britain's among hardest hit by COVID 5 years on is the headline for The Observer. It explains that as the anniversary of the first lockdown approaches, there's evidence that the UK is struggling more than other nations to recover from the pandemic. The Mail on Sunday reports on an asylum seeker who entered the UK last week. The paper accuses him of being a Palestinian militant who's called for Jewish people to be killed. And the Sunday Mirror leads on plans by ministers to crack down on thugs who terrorise communities. It says Labour's war on jobs will involve a new law to be voted on by MPs this week. The King is calling for countries to work together in what he calls these uncertain times. He's made the plea in his annual Commonwealth Day message. Our royal correspondent Sean Coughlan has been reading it.
At a time of international tensions over Ukraine, the King's message calls for unity and building bridges between countries, following the example of the Commonwealth, which he says shows a spirit of support and friendship. In his address, which will be delivered on Commonwealth Day tomorrow, he says it's all too easy to believe that our differences are problems instead of a source of strength. This annual message from the head of the Commonwealth comes as the King has been playing an unexpected role in international diplomacy, including his public show of solidarity for Ukraine's President Zelensky. The King's message praised the example of the Commonwealth as a way of bringing people together from different parts of the world.
The headlines again. Officials in Ukraine say at least 25 people were killed in the latest wave of Russian attacks. Poland's prime minister said this is what happens when someone appeases barbarians. Iran's supreme leader has rejected a demand from President Trump to reach a nuclear deal with the US or face a potential military consequence. A monitoring group says the number of deaths in the upsurge of fighting in Syria has now passed 1,000. The Conservatives have said the Human Rights Act should no longer apply to immigration decisions. BBC News.
With Andrew Peach. Now, before we get into our book club tonight, here's a weather update with Louise Lear.
Good morning. It was a beautiful start to the weekend with a lot of spring sunshine and warmth out there. In fact, all four nations saw temperatures in the high teens. And the good news is, part two of the weekend is looking just as good for most of us as high pressure continues to dominate. We do have weather fronts, though, topping and tailing the country. And these are likely to produce a few showers in southwest England and a little more cloud here throughout the afternoon. But for the rest of England, Wales and Northern Ireland, it's going to be a fine start to the day. Any early morning mist and fog will clear quite quickly away. With plenty of sunshine dominating, temperatures will start to climb. The wind, though, is starting to pull round to an easterly, so it will feel just a little bit fresher along North Sea coast. Highs here of 12 to 14 degrees. But the further west, sheltered from the onshore flow, we're probably going to see temperatures again peaking in the mid to high teens. Now, the bulk of Scotland too will stay dry, sunny and warm for this stage in March. So expect highs of 11 to 14 Celsius. But there is, however, this weather front draped across the north, and that's going to continue to produce some nuisance cloud and some showery rain to northern and western Isles. Fresher winds here too, so highs of just 8 to 10 degrees. Make the most of this weekend's weather, though, because by Monday we're going to start to see a change. A cold front will move down from the north and introduce a cold northeasterly wind. That means temperatures will start to drop below average for mid-March. Most of us are going to stay largely fine and dry, but there is a risk of some showers in the far north draping their way down across the east coast, and these will have a wintry flavour. And on top of that, we could see a return to some nighttime frost. Whatever you're doing, though, have a lovely Sunday.
Thank you, Louise. Now, let's take a quick look ahead to tomorrow night here on Radio 4. 2025 marks the 1700th anniversary of the Nicene Creed, the core statement of Christian faith which is spoken in churches across the world. And this year's Lent Talks offers six personal insights of faith on six key lines from the Creed. That starts tomorrow evening at 7:45. Now, though, our book club begins, and it's not a whodunit, but a whydunit.
Hello and welcome to Book Club from Glasgow, where this month's group of readers is joined by, it's fair to say, one of the adornments of the Scottish crime-writing wave of the last few decades, known inevitably as Tartan Noir, Christopher Brookmyre, whose plots produce as much black humour